For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Before we begin, we would like to thank 6 Point Builders for their support of our show. 6 Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome everyone to another episode of Revolution Recap. We have a special bonus interview episode for you today. Brad Feldman rejoins the show. He spoke to Seth Maycomber of the Blazing Musket about the Rebs. Before we hop over to the interview, we wanted to say thank you to everyone who sent in a voicemail. We have all of that queued up, and we'll be releasing that episode in a few days, probably on Friday or Saturday for some weekend listening while the Rebs have a bye week. We also want to thank our sponsor, BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up to the national championship. You can access the most up-to-date wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices, and even track your bracket in real time all the way through the tournament. So head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And now we'll hop over to the interview.
All right, Seth Maycomber from the Blazing Musket. Lucky to be joined by the voice of the New England Revolution, the longtime voice of the New England Revolution, Brad Feldman. So happy that we can be here and talk a little soccer in New England.
It's about time. Thanks for having me, Seth. Really an honor. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I always enjoy catching up with you before the games. Very fortunate to have the opportunity to talk to you right now. Obviously, it's a little bit of an up and down season. I don't have to tell you for the New England Revolution. When it comes to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, they are 3-0-1. They advanced to face Club America. But in league play, we're looking at an 0-4-1 record. I'm wondering, you're so good with words. I love hearing you on the call, whether it's on the radio or if you toggle over on Apple TV to listen to those home games. What is one word that you would use to describe the New England Revolution right now?
Undervalued. I think that at 0-4-1, you know, they always say you are what you are. And that, you know, that's the raw fact when you look at the points total in the standings. But it's early in the season. The breaks haven't gone their way with the referees. Whatever you want to make of the expected goal metric, you know, the last three games, at least the home games, that they've had the expected goals edge. And I just think that over the course of the rest of the 34-game season, all things being equal against similar competition, that things will break in their favor more often than they have been, and that they still have a very strong possibility of being a playoff team.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. There was a stat that came out that mentioned that there were only three teams who ended up making the postseason after starting the league play with a 4 straight losses. The New England Revolution obviously found themselves in that category this year. There's a lot of soccer left to play, right? I mean, no one wins a championship in those early games. But I'm wondering, is there a little bit of a reason to be concerned about this New England Revolution side right now And if not, is there a point that you would be concerned about this team?
Well, the math is the math, right? Points gained in February and March are worth as much as those later in the season. The converse is true. Points dropped. So, you know, also are ones you can never get back. So mathematically, you know, the odds of them making it aren't as good. So that right off the bat is a cause for concern. If they are playing in a you know, poor or indifferent fashion, I'd be more concerned. I don't know. You know, they've had stretches, and we saw this last year too, even when they were cooking in the first half of the season, where they would be great for 20, 30 minutes, and then they'd have a whole, you know, a half where they just looked less cohesive. One of the causes for concern for me is, though, even, you know, I think that when you look at the game summaries online and the scouting software, they haven't, other than the game that they were, they got walloped down in Atlanta, they haven't had meaningful counterattacks in their league games the last three games. And I think that that's where they can really get after these teams. But for whatever reason, whether it's the distribution, the orders to seize that initiative, I can't imagine that Caleb Porter doesn't want them to break when it's on, or other teams scouting them and knowing how to shut off the out ball, whether it's to Carlos or Giacomo Vrioni. I haven't done a deep enough dive to say, but I do know they're not getting transition opportunities where they've got, you know, favorable numbers. You know, they've had good approach play at speed where it's sort of a half break. And I thought you saw that, you know, last week in the late stages where they're attacking both, you know, down both wings. And there were stretches where they looked very good. But, you know, overall, I'm not overly concerned. But, you know, I also, you know, yeah, there are some things to fix. Like depth at striker is a concern.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm someone who likes to look at the tactical edge of the game and how Caleb Porter is playing. And I feel like I'm still trying to figure things out. I think there's obviously an element of him changing his tactics, his formations game to game. You know, we saw that 4-3-3, especially when Carlos Gil wasn't out against Alajuense. And that's where you saw a little bit more of those counter opportunities, right? So I'm wondering, when you watch this New England Revolution team, when you think of a Caleb Porter team, how would you define this team tactically? Because I have some thoughts, but you're the one that's sitting in the booth and watching these games. What are you seeing right now?
Well, first thing I'll say is I really do have to go back and watch the video. I'm watching the match. It's harder to analyze. You know, there were times in the old days where I would do, especially radio-only games, where I was, you know, the sole voice, kind of the old, you know, British way of doing it, where you didn't have a co-commentator or an analyst next to you, which can be a grind for the listener having to hear me for 90 plus minutes. But regardless, it makes it's hard to analyze the game in its totality, because your main job is to call the touches and identify who's on the ball and describe the action on and around the ball. You know, and even if you can recognize, you know, a run at the far post or a good tracking run by the defensive player, you're not seeing the whole team shape. If anybody can do that really successfully, then they've got a better microprocessor in there and wider peripheral vision than I have. But, you know, my overall sense is that I really like the patterns of play. It's the way, at times, the old Stevie Nichol teams used to play, where you zip it inside, get it out to the wings. And, you know, when they establish that tempo in the buildup, switch the point of attack quickly, and they have guys who've been like really spraying great cross-field balls a lot of the time, and that doesn't just get the defending team moving and out of their shape, but it tires them out if you keep doing it. And so there are a lot of things I like about the Caleb Porter system. I also was fortunate enough to watch the two home Champions Cup games at field level. And I was within earshot of Coach Porter, listening to his instructions, watching the shifts he made. And, you know, both of those nights, even though the conditions weren't great, I thought, you know, the Revs really looked good. But we saw that in Leagues Cup against, you know, sort of the bottom half of the table Mexican League sides. The Revs are an order of magnitude better than teams like that, which is encouraging. You wouldn't have said that 20 years ago about, you know, MLS teams versus, you know, Central American teams necessarily. I do think they caught Alajuelense when they were in a bad moment. But that said, those were credible and deserved victories. I think LDA, Alajuela, are better than what they showed. They went to pieces after that first goal, you know, the Nick Lima goal. And so then the middle of the field opened up, and that sort of inverted triangle, 4-3-3, whatever you want to call it, really worked to great effect. And you had guys like Esmir and Shankalai really cooking, and you know, but you know what it looks like to me. Again, this is not, you know, I'm not a coach or a scout for the Revs, but what I do see is that there are not a lot of secrets in Major League Soccer now. These teams have deep scouting departments, video scouts, analytics departments. And, you know, the margins are very fine, and there's not much in terms of tendencies and tactical shifts that these teams will not have accounted for. You really have to throw them a curve to catch them with something, and then they're likely to adapt at halftime unless you then pivot back. And I thought that's why it's clever to sort of switch the wingers for the Revs, but you saw when it was crunch time, he wanted to go back, you know, to Shanka on the left, because that's really where he looks the most effective at cutting in on his right foot. So, but I think Caleb Porter is a smart soccer man. I think, you know, I feel badly from a Revolution perspective, and also for this guy, you know, just shared his sort of cancer diagnosis and experience there. Like I wanted for the club and for the guy to get off to a good start, but it's hardly irrecoverable at this point. You know, they could even, you know, lose next week at home against Charlotte and it's still salvageable. But I do think that they have to win that game to get things back on track quickly. And even though there's a break right now, it's not that long a break, you know, it does give them some continuity and training and some rest and recovery time. But, you know, I'm taking a wait and see atmosphere. You know, as you quite rightly note, Seth, I've been doing this a long time. I've seen all the ups and downs. This is hardly the worst situation. If you look at where things were 7-8 months ago, this feels like a tropical breeze.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right that there's just, it's a new coach. It's a very, in my mind, tactical coach in terms of his approach. I think there's things that you can see. For me, you're seeing the passes along the back line, you know, trying to be really patient. And there are really games where you see that patience paying off, because the passing allows for some pressure to come in, and then a Mark Anthony Kay gets on the ball and then the break happens, or a Carlos Hill gets on the ball and then the break happens. So you see that happening. You also see times when there's a missed pass along the back line, and that leads to the other team capitalizing or getting a corner or getting those opportunities.
That's the risk reward, right? Like that's why, you know, in the old days, English teams didn't, you know, fuss around with it at the back. They wanted to launch it into the channels and put it in the danger area. And, you know, that's kind of a reductive sort of polar opposite, but, you know, drawing the team in and then boom, boom, you know, if you can get to Carlos Hill's feet in a dangerous spot, he's still as good as anyone in MLS at opening you up. He's so surgical, and his feints and sort of misdirection and his ability to put the ball wherever he wants seemingly is, you know, second to none. But, you know, at the feet of a center back or a defensive midfielder, if the pressure comes, even good ones, you're taking more of a risk. Not just because of the skill sets of those players, but also where on the field you are. And, you know, I think it was Rachel Wood or maybe it was Clyde, you know, the two analysts the previous 2 weeks, Revs had a giveaway in a situation similar to what you described. And I think it was Clyde who said, you know, a good professional team is going to punish that. I was like, an average high school team is going to punish that. You can't give the ball away in that, you know, cone of danger in front of the 18 extended out, you know, to the halfway line. That's a sort of basic soccer. You don't need to be a great tactician to understand that. And it's true of most ball sports where you're attacking a goal, like turnovers in your defensive half of the field in the middle of the field are going to get punished. And so when you have these patterns of play, you got to zip it. You got to be precise, and you got to get it off your feet when the pressure comes, and not be afraid to skip the midfield when the situation calls for it. And listen, Caleb Porter's won two MLS Cups. He understands that. And it's just those little fine margins in the course of a 90-minute game where you can get it right 19 times out of 20, but the 20th time they jump it, and that's the goal that wins the game. You cut those things out, all of a sudden the season takes on a different complexion.
Well, I think what becomes hard, too, is that I went back and looked at those early games, especially those first three league games. And if you look back at them, honestly, some of the game plan wasn't bad. You know, you have that opportunity where it hits off the crossbar. I think it was against DC. You have these opportunities against Atlanta, the penalty shout that could have happened against Eshmir in the game. Like, you get a situation where maybe you're up 1-0 and it's a game of momentum, like you see against El Juanse, right?
And that's why I'm not panicking. I agree with that. Even in Atlanta, where the scoreline looked bad, you know, VAR and the replacement refs did them no favors. And they've hit the woodwork, you know, even last week. I don't know. Did that ball off of Rioni's chest actually hit the crossbar? We couldn't kind of tell from the replay we saw. But whatever, that was a strange one where he ended up in the goal, but the ball didn't. You know, and then the week before that, I'm still convinced that, right, so Lucho Acosta came on and opened them up for like 10 minutes. They didn't know where to find him. That said, I do think going back and looking at the offside call, which is a mystery to me until somebody clued me in that it was out at midfield on the initial header coming back from an offside position, because obviously there was no offside on the actual strike, you know. But then the one that was called a goal for the first Cincinnati goal wasn't all the way over the line. Now, they don't have Hawkeye technology. They don't have a, you know, definitive angle. The call shouldn't have been made on the field by the AR, who was blocked by the goal post and the mesh, and was 40 some odd yards away, but it's hard to overturn that without clear and obvious evidence. Now, you can moan about the refs all you want and the breaks even out over time. I realize that, but there are so many things that, you know, it's a hair's breadth one way or the other. And I do believe that things will in the league will be pointed the right direction sooner rather than later. I'm an optimist, but that's also my evaluation based on past experience.
Well, and I think that, to your point, this is a person who has won in two other places. He's missed the playoffs too. We've seen that in the past for Caleb Porter, but I think that he's a belief in his game plan and game model. And like I said before, I'm seeing some positives, but then some breaks aren't going your way. Chocolate hit the post four times so far, right?
I mean, I was trying to get that stat before I came on with you. And I knew it was definitively three. Were all four in the league?
No, I think one was in the Champions League.
Right. So three in MLS and one in Champions Cup, where he has four goals. And, you know, that will even out over time. I do think, though, when I talk about scouting, one of the things I notice is looking at all of his shots stacked up, it does appear to me that people know when he cuts to that right foot that he's going to uncork it. And he's had a lot of shots blocked. He needs to release that a little bit quicker, not necessarily when he starts to shape to shoot. Everybody in the building knows it. You know what I mean? He's not a mystery anymore like he was coming in last season. And, but I do also think he's going to start wrapping his foot around a few more of those. And, you know, his goals total in the league will look similarly impressive to what he has in Champions Cup right now.
Brian, I want to eventually
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Talking to someone like you is great because we've been around for a long time. We know a lot of people. I do want to talk about that in a moment, but I also want to talk about something that came out today in The Athletic and that anonymous executive report that came out. I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to look at it.
I have not read it, but you can summarize it for me and I'll do my best with it.
I just want to talk a little bit about Chris Tierney. Chris Tierney was someone who was recognized as someone who could potentially be a sporting director or GM in this league at one point. I've covered him as a player. I've talked to him a little bit as an executive, but I'm curious to know, you're around the office a little bit. What is there about?
Yeah, I'm smirking, not because I don't think it's true. I'm smirking because I could have told you that back in like 2009, you know. No, seriously though. Like Chris is a quality guy, a bright guy whose intellect goes beyond just soccer and Major League Soccer. you know, we all know about his precision left-footed crossing as a player. And, you know, certainly people like Stevie Nichol and Taylor Twellman have sort of outed his secret, which is that you got to put in your 10,000 hours. Like Chris certainly had more athletic ability and natural talent than most people, but he had to make up the difference between the super elite athletes and what he had with hard work and intelligence. And I think that was a function of his game before he got to the Revs, but the Revs is where he made it pay off, is as a professional, like playing for Virginia, and, you know, he was at Bolts and Nobles, you know. And there was an apocryphal story about Paul Mariner, who I think had him for one season as a youth player, pulling him aside and told him that, like, you know what you have and you know how to do it. Stop being, I can't remember the exact dialogue, but it was basically, it was, you know, just like, you're smart enough, grow up, which most of us need that talk. A lot of people don't put that into action. And if somebody had handicapped the odds of Chris Tierney having the professional career he had when he was 15, I think the odds would have been pretty long. Even though he was in that elite group, he was not in that super elite group. I don't think I'm misspeaking there. And so all of those characteristics, which he took on his shoulders to get himself up the ladder as a player, I think he's applied as an executive. One of those things is patience. One of those attributes is patience. I used to give him a little stick when I'd go into the offices and I'd see him there. You know, I don't know whether it's Y Scout or Instat or YouTube or some, you know, West African or Eastern European app of, you know, that's parallel to that. And he would be sitting there clicking through tag games and watching video scouts, you know, and he always has his, you know, sort of conversations, whether it's with agents or other executives within the club or outside the club, in a very discreet way. But he was never a guy who played sort of like phony cloak and dagger games. He's, you know, straightforward. You don't feel like he's insecure in a way where he's worried that you're always going to get one over on him, or that he's trying to get one over on you, although he is very competitive. And he reveals as much as is ethical, but no more, no less, which I think is, that's the game, right? Like, somebody who does that with a very different style is Garth Lagerwey at Atlanta. And Garth's a guy who I've been friendly with and known since he was a player. I've watched his progression through MLS. And I think a lot of people underestimated him before he won that title at Salt Lake. And now there are more and more people like Chris and like Garth who have that sort of winning combination of being educated and intellectual, but also having been professional players. You do not stick as a top division professional player if you don't have that sort of dog in you, that, which means that the high competitive level, the ability to play through pain, the ability to take pressure on your shoulders in real-time situations. It's the reason we love sports and we love football. It's that we're watching people do things that most people, you know, even if they can do it in their real life in whatever arena they work in or operate in, to see people doing it when there's time pressure on a big stage against other people of similar abilities, and to see how people differentiate themselves. And I think, you know, the ability to do that, you don't have to be a Hall of Fame player or best 11 player. If you've gone through several seasons as a player, but then you also have that analytical ability, and you understand the wider world, the context in which these international transfers happen, having been through the youth soccer progression, even though obviously the pyramid has changed since somebody like Chris was in it, or, you know, Garth Lagerwey, right? We've seen all these different iterations of the Soccer Federation Academy and, you know, now MLS Next and all that stuff, you know, the way people process it, and identifying talent and making deals, being able to read your counterparts at other teams, develop relationships where it's not always adversarial. Sometimes you can do a mutually beneficial deal. People don't always realize that in that business, but the guys who are good do realize that, because you got to live to fight another day. And, you know, you don't want to, even if you eviscerate another team in a deal one time, if you fleece them too bad, they're not going to come back to you. You know, like, there's, you know, and I feel like Chris is a guy who didn't show up saying, hey, I read the MLS, you know, personnel rules, which are arcane and are a moving target year to year, and I'm ready to go. He sat there, he clicked through all those videos. He's willing to take, you know, suggestions, instructions, even orders from people higher up the food chain, and had enough humility to be able to manage up, you know, and create good outcomes for the Revs. Now, it's not just him in that pyramid. You know, there, you know, somebody like Remy Roy doesn't get mentioned a lot. Pertinolfo, obviously, you know, and, you know, on the business side, Brian Bolello, and they've got a whole army of scouts and analytics people who are really, really good. And then knowing how to apply that information, because right, that sweet spot between the sort of blood and guts and the athletic part and the sort of qualitative intangibles. And then all this information you have now on the performance side, on the analytics side, on the video side, it's a huge task to synthesize all that. And what we see on match day is this distillation of that. And so when we talk about, like, you know, Porter's patterns of play and everything, I will tell you this. Anytime somebody, listen, for one thing, I understand one of the things that we have to sort of roll with and encourage are hot takes and emotional responses to these things. But I do feel like, and I don't say this to sort of belittle anybody's opinion, but in most cases, not every case, but in most cases, when something bad happens, they say, well, why don't they have a guy to do this? Or why would you play that guy there? It's not that those things haven't been thought through or that those issues or potential risks haven't been addressed or they haven't, there hasn't been an attempt to mitigate or address or upgrade. It's like within the strictures of the salary cap, the MLS personnel rules, the existing, you know, roster that you have, and then the team that you're playing against, you're trying to create these moments where you have an advantage and you capitalize on it and then take away their advantages. And there's this whole year-round process of trying to recruit and retain and keep, you know, sort of manage the health and fitness of these guys. And so if your defensive midfielder coughs the ball up, it pops on him with his back to goal and the pattern and the buildup, the one time they throw the switch for pressure, they're just like, all right, they made a good play. And it's like, yeah, championship teams do that less than others. But I think somebody, it's a long-winded answer to your question, obviously, but I think Chris, more than most, gets that. And the one thing I will say is that, you know, Chris sometimes takes a skeptical view of things, but I think it's a very informed skepticism. And so I listen to what he has to say, even if I, within a range, disagree. I don't usually 180 disagree from him. It's usually a few degrees of separation. But, you know, he is entirely credible. And the one thing I would say is that the Revs should do everything they can, keep him in Boston, keep him in New England.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a long time servant, obviously, to the club. And I always appreciate it as a media member that he was always willing to step up to the mic and speak and have his say.
Straightforward. So the best one ever was when he, I think he was a rookie and we were in, I think it was San Jose, and Greg Lawless, who's still a good friend of mine, we did the post-game interview with the headset. And Greg asked some question to the effect of, you know, say, Chris, you know, I'm not going to do a Greg Lawless impression, although I could. We saw you serving in a lot of those really good left-footed balls, you know, for Twellman and Noonan from deep, just inside, you know, your offensive half of the field, you know, is that because, you know, you didn't want to take on the right back or the right midfielder or whatever it was? And he sort of, like, Chris is sitting there looking, sort of looking at the ground. He sort of turns to the camera mic. He's like, Greg, just come out and say it. I'm slow. He's like, what are you implying? You want me to say it? He's like, be real. He's like, yes, that's a good place on the field for me. If I can get a little time and space, get my head up. I like to cross from deep. Would it be better if I got to the end line? Probably, you know, something like that. But I was just like, way to go, Greg.
That's awesome.
But he was a rookie. So it was just like, yeah, Chris, tell him, kid.
That's awesome. So I do want to talk a little bit about that. You know, I think one of the things about you when I listen to your call is that you're always giving Lots of little factoids, lots of little information. You're someone that's been around for a long time. I remember watching a game and you're talking about how Evan Bush was a member of the Cape Cod Crusaders, or even like recently, just mentioning like, you know, Carlos's kid's name, Marco. Like, it's clear that you're around the team, that you understand New England soccer. My question to you is, what are some of your favorite facts, past or present Revs players? What are things that you're like, yeah, that's got to be mentioned when you uncovered something or you have a little nugget?
What you're doing here, Seth, is setting me up to give myself credit for a couple things that were mentioned earlier in the Champions Cup broadcast, where, you know, maybe I bristled a little bit at the idea that I hadn't brought up that Dave Romney is a distant relative of former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. I mentioned that a couple of times when he was first signed last year. And also that Giacomo Brioni's family is one of the oldest noble families in Albania. That was something I dropped as soon as he was signed late in 2022. I thought that was an interesting factoid. And I think there is a lot of fluidity between families like that in Northern Italy. Like, I think they're, you know, if you go back far enough, these borders were not what they were. But, you know, I think he is of noble birth if you go back enough generations. And all of a sudden you look at him, you're like, yeah, that tracks, right? Same with Dave Romney. But Dave, I walked off the field from training with him the other day. I don't talk to Dave that often, but when I do, I'm always impressed with just his demeanor. And, you know, he gives off a good energy. I don't believe he has ever spoken to Mitt Romney, who, you know, I actually have. I'm not trying to name drop. One time was very uncomfortable. I was shooting him on video for the Revolution's 10th anniversary. You know, congratulations for the jumbo, as they used to call it, before the the video board extended whatever 130 feet back when it was a normal size. You know, anyway, things being what they were, I was multitasking. And I had to shoot it, and he was getting, you know, ramping up for potentially running for president in a few years. And his director of communications did not like the fact that I was holding the mic and I had a small light. They wanted a full lighting setup so that he looked, you know, and so it was a very uncomfortable interaction, but he did do it, to be fair. You know, he just gave a very terse, like, congratulations to the New England Revolution on 10 years of Major League Soccer. And it dropped in between, you know, the mayor of Providence and, you know, the mayor of Boston, it looked fine. I'm not friends with Mitt Romney, but anyway, so those are two, I digress again, but those are two things that I realized I was proud of that I hadn't thought of until somebody, you know, what it was is that some of the people were like, wow, thanks to that guy for letting us know. We would have never known that otherwise. I was like, sync the home audio. You'll know these things. The other thing I will say, like with Evan Bush, I always look for if the guy played at UConn or University of Maine or was all state in Vermont when he was, you know, in high school, or he spent a summer with one of the PDL teams in the region, any kind of New England link. I try to highlight that, you know, because I, for obvious reasons, same reason you guys cover all these things on, you know, on the Blazing Musket. So, you know, yeah, those are the things I like to do.
Yeah, I think those things are always great. It helps with the broadcast. I'm also wondering, because one of my favorite things about going down to Gillette Stadium and talking to Sean Donahue or Frank DeLapa, you know, guys that have been covering the team for a long time, is talking about, like, the stories and the people. And my favorite to always bring up is, you know, when Emmanuel Osei stepped up and stole a free kick from Steve Ralston.
Oh, that's one of the funniest things ever.
It just made no sense to me. So I'm wondering, can you give me a lesser known story from the Revs
from the field? That may be the topper, you know, that and Conno Smith's free kick that, like, he took from, like, the right center channel. And I said to Greg, what's the play here? He's like, low head height to the far post so they can attack it. And Conno hooked it. It didn't even get past the top of the 18. And back then they had the configuration, so everybody was on the east side of the stadium. So it just hooked and kept hooking. It stayed high. And it hit, like, the canopy tarps, you know, it hit parallel to the top of the 18, 10 rows up on the west side of the stadium. And all of a sudden, they cut to a close-up of Conno. Like, we were both stunned, and Conno sort of shrugged and looked at the sideline, and Stevie Nichols bright red, screaming at him. And I said, that wasn't, and Greg said, no, that wasn't low. That wasn't head height. It wasn't to the far post. And then he said, I don't think that little gesture is going to get Cano off the hook, Stevie Nick, right now. So that was a good one. That was, and that went viral for that. That was like 2007 or something like that. Back then, news traveled slower, but I think it was Irish national radio or TV, like, took that call and put it on there. And it went around on, like, big soccer as, like, the worst free kick in, you know, pro soccer history kind of thing. Which, you know, I think it's easier for Cano to swallow now that he's, you know, professional manager. We're very proud of Cano, what he's done in these parts. If you're asking for stories, I like to take partial credit because I helped organize a preseason trip to Bermuda where he was first scouted by Stevie and Paul, playing for the Bermuda national team, where he did one of his, you know, trademark, you know, 65-yard sprints, you know, down the left channel and cut inside and scored against the Revs. I was calling that game on a cell phone for the Revs website. And, you know, they made an offer on the spot. The Osei thing might've topped Cano just because the normally cool, calm, collected Steve Ralston, like the camera caught him dropping some expletive. He turned to Stevie Nicol, who had scouted Osei in some sort of free agent camp in Ghana. You know, Osei, he was a rare bird. He was a different kettle of fish, as they say. He had gone from playing for Ghana's Olympic team to playing for Livorno, which was for a couple of seasons was in Serie A, but then they sank like a rock thereafter. But he played like, I don't know, a dozen games for Livorno, then went from there to like the German fifth division. Because who knows who his agent was? It was very strange. And then from there, went to like the Romanian top division, played a half a season, and went back to Ghana, was just playing there. TV signed him. And so after this was like 45 yards away from the goal. And for the center back to like sprint up and take it away from the, you know, the all-time assist leader, and just blazed it over the bar into the stands. Like, it was nowhere close. And it was like, gotcha. And they caught Stevie Ralston. Raleigh turns to the bench and says, Stevie, who the blanky blank is that guy? Like, why is he in a Revolution uniform? Why is he taking the free kick? I saw Stevie at the Tradition Awards where they were, where he was introducing Taylor the winter before last. And we had a good laugh about that. That's still one of the all time greats. Like, we could do a whole separate show, Seth.
Yes.
On Emmanuel Osei. And I don't like to make fun of players. The cultural misalignment was more pronounced by a long stretch than any other foreign player the Revs ever signed. He just was like from another planet. And I don't think it was, you know, it's not a value judgment. It's just a fact. He was a different kind of guy.
Why was his nickname Juice? I'm not sure I ever got the story of why he had the nickname Juice.
I don't want to mistell that. I think it had something to do with the Revolution's breakfast.
Okay.
But I don't want to give the details if I don't, you know, it's Brad Knighton would be able to tell you. Chris Tierney would be able to tell you. He used to show up early and like watch, you know, Martin Lawrence on reruns on a loop before anybody else showed up. And I think he wanted the Juice wallet. I think that was his breakfast, but I don't know beyond. Okay. Beyond that, you know, I'd be doing the story a disservice, but yeah, he another time, man, I'm telling you, the free kick, you don't know the half. There, you know, just Emmanuel Osei once got, this is the last one I'm going to tell, he once got pulled over by the police because he didn't have, and they were like, sir, you aware that, you know, like license and registration. He's like, you're aware that you don't have license plates on your car. And then I think it was a stadium, it might have been a Mansfield police officer, like looked in the back seat and he had the Massachusetts tags. And his answer was something to the effect of, like, the red or the green paint on the license plate doesn't match the paint on my car. It doesn't go. So I didn't want to put them on. How do you work with, like, where do you begin? like now you're starting to understand the frame of reference we're dealing with. He's like, yeah, I just didn't like how they looked. So I keep here. You can see I've registered my car. We're good, right? He's like, no, you need to affix them to the front and back of your vehicle. He's like, yeah, I'm not, you know, again, I'm not going to try to do an Osei impression, but he was just like, he wasn't happy with that. He did it begrudgingly, but he had to wait till he nearly got like $500 moving violation or something before. Yeah, that gives you an idea of the kinds of stories and whatever the 2 years he was in these parts. Different dude, different kind of guy. But, you know, he played hard, played very hard.
Right, you know what you're setting this up for. You're setting up a sequel because there's stories in there that need to come out, whether it's about Osei or someone else.
When I do the book, you'll yeah, someday.
I know from my perspective, you've given me a lot of time. I appreciate it. I always enjoy catching up with you. You know, for those who don't know, 98.5 The Sports Hub, you can catch the call. And on Apple Home Games, you can switch over and make sure that you can hear Brad, whether it's Clyde Sims, Charlie Davies, Rachel Wood. Always insightful. This is a guy who has a lot of years in the New England Revolution. He understands New England soccer. I don't know how his bracket is doing when it comes to March Madness, but definitely
pretty good. I picked a long shot. I'm going Sweet 16 and probably Elite Eight. I'm excited. My bracket's good, not great. There are a few that, you know, upsets that destroy me, but I'm in that like 84% zone right now. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, Brad, thank you so much for taking the time. And be sure to catch him on the soccer show every week with DJ Bean. Always insightful. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Seth. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks again to Brad Feldman for joining the show. And thank you very much to Seth and the Blazing Musket for this interview today. Remember to subscribe to the Blazing Musket and follow them on Twitter at Blazing Musket. Also, thank you to our presenting sponsor, BetOnline. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We will be back with another episode this weekend to help pass the time during the bye week. But until then, thank you everyone for listening and go Revs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.